Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. 1 week, well, not even a week, this Sunday is Christmas. It's the first day of Hanukkah. The day after, I believe, is Diwali, the Hindu celebration of the solstice. The Buddhists celebrate Rohatsu. African Americans celebrate Kwanzaa, the day on the 26th, I believe, this year. The pagans are celebrating Merry Yule and Happy Solstice. What would that be, on Thursday or Friday of this week? And Joe Farah's with us. He's the CEO and editor of WorldNet Daily, a conservative news source. He's also a syndicated columnist with Creator Syndicate. His latest book is Taking America Back. Joe, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
Glad to have you, Joe. In your column here called Christmas is Controversy, you talk about the attacks, the war, basically, that you guys are fighting to keep Christmas in Christmas, as it were. And you say it's paying off, but the Grinches will be back next year. I'd ask you, why are you guys declaring war on Hanukkah?
No, I'm definitely not. In fact, I not only support Hanukkah, celebrate it, I think it's a wonderful
Jewish
holiday
Joe?
That Christians ought to celebrate as well as Jews. So I have nothing against Hanukkah. To suggest that celebrating Christmas is somehow an attack on Hanukkah is pretty far-fetched.
Well, but to say to people who are speaking to a large number of people that when they're speaking to all those people who would include Hindus who celebrate Diwali and Buddhists who celebrate Rohatsu and African Americans who celebrate Kwanzaa and Jews who celebrate the festival who celebrate Hanukkah, that they should say to them Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays.
Well, there
seems
is
a little in your face to me, Joe.
Tom, there is no Islamic holiday at this time of the year. Ramadan is past, and when Ramadan was here, the president didn't wish Muslims happy holidays. He wished them a happy Ramadan, and he had them at the White House, and he paid tribute to their holiday with great specificity. And Christians, I think, are beginning to expect at least equal treatment. You know, the president in the past has made Hanukkah proclamations and Ramadan proclamations on the White House website, but what we're noticing, particularly in the last few years, is kind of a hypersensitivity by the president. You know, I don't want to make too much of just the president because there's a larger picture here. There's a larger context, a cultural context, and I think from my point of view, I'm a little disappointed that the president isn't trying to pierce that hypersensitivity by celebrating Christmas openly. For instance, you know, we can make a big deal about the Christmas card, which I never did, by the way. I write a daily column.
You mean the fact that the White House sent out a Christmas card that doesn't mention the word Christmas?
Yeah. I write a daily column. I do a three hours on talk radio every day. I never mentioned the fact that I threw away his Christmas card until a reporter from the Washington Post asked me, you know, did you get the card? What did you do with it? And I just told them. But the bigger issue, I think, is this. We've got a cultural war against Christmas, and I don't think you have to...
Hang on just a second, Joe. Who is leading this war?
The ACLU and the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, they're the vanguard.
And what is their agenda?
The hyper-secularization of our culture, to bring us to the point where people are so sensitive about even wishing each other a Merry Christmas. The kind of censorship climate that they have created, we now have, you know...
Joe, I'm in my 50s, and I remember wishing people happy holidays even when I was a kid. I noticed...
Hey, Tom, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you think schools ought to change the words of Silent Night, change the title of the songs when they perform in public schools across this country?
That's Joe, I think that you and I both know that that thing that O'Reilly brought up and hyped out there was a pastiche. It was a song about a Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
I don't know what O'Reilly's talking about. I'm talking about what WorldNet Daily has been reporting. We have another example of this today in yet another school in New Jersey, I believe, where this is happening, Tom. If you want to put your blinders on and say it's not happening,
Joe, you can. If you've got a half a dozen incidents, if you've got a half a dozen examples of random political correctness run amok around the United States, I don't see how that in any way constitutes a war on anything. That is random political correctness run amok.
Well, I'm glad you recognize exactly what it is as political correctness run amok. The unfortunate thing is it's not isolated. The incidents are happening across the country, hundreds of them, hundreds of documented cases. Go to the Alliance Defense Fund website. You will see all of the letters that they've had to send out this Christmas. Each year it gets a little darker and a little more perverse.
So you're the world that you're envisioning, Joe Farah, the CEO and editor of WorldNet Daily, you're envisioning a world in which Christians are persecuted.
Christians have been persecuted, you know, for the last...
Christians are the majority in America,
millennia,
Joe.
To ignore that has happened worldwide and to suggest that it cannot happen in this country, I think is rather bizarre.
So you see that coming down the road. That's what you are genuinely afraid of. This is not some
not
weird hype
of it.
That
I'm recognizing what's happening, and I'm blowing the whistle on it. And I'm surprised that you, who
now you say the ACLU and people
so
for the
many
American
different places would not recognize when it happens to Christians.
Yeah. Do you think that the people behind this are Jews?
No.
You don't.
No.
Do you think that they are atheists?
I believe you know when you're talking about the ACLU and Americans United for Separation of Church and State, I think you're talking about mainly people who are atheists, who are secular humanists, who believe that man is at the center.
You know, I know Barry Lynn, the guy who's the head of Americans for Separation of Church and State. He's a minister. He's
yeah,
a Christian
I've
minister.
I've debated him many times, and he's a phony minister. You know, these groups always want to go get somebody, you know, of the cloth to represent them. It's a great charade.
He runs the group.
Yeah, I know. You know, if I were starting some kind of a hate group, I'd want to get a victim of that hate group.
So, Joe, what would you like to see happen? Would you like to see that everybody has to be greeted with Merry Christmas? And if they're not, what penalty do you think should be inflicted on people?
Of course not. What I'm talking about, and you used the term political correctness before I did. What I want to see is a culture where people are not hypersensitive to a greeting one another that way, where retailers who are making a bloody fortune on Christmas would recognize the holiday that 96%.
You don't think
of
people
Americans
buy Hanukkah don't. Gifts?
What's that?
You don't think people buy Hanukkah gifts?
Of course they do. But
then what's wrong with the retailer saying Happy Holidays?
96% of Americans celebrate Christmas. Even
oh, so to hell with the minority.
Well,
screw the Jews. Forget about them. They're not celebrating Christmas, so we got to make sure that the retailers only cater to the 96% of us, because we're the majority.
What you're worried about is the majority expressing its will. You've had it very good, where the elitists in this country, the people who listen to Air America.
What the founders of this nation worried about was the majority expressing its will. That's why we live in a constitutionally limited democratic republic rather than a pure democracy,
Thank
Joe.
Thank you very much, and that's what I preach every day.
And you are advocating the majority asserting their will religiously.
What is wrong? You know, I'm not talking about government forcing its will on people. I'm talking about people throughout our culture expressing their will. That's what I'm doing here.
No, you started off by talking about how you wanted the president to be issuing a proclamation.
I'm not holding a gun to your head, am I, Tom, and telling you what to do? I'm expressing my will on a talk show.
But you just asked, you started out this conversation, Joe, by saying that you thought the president should be issuing a proclamation about Christmas.
I did not. You're putting words in my mouth.
Well, did I miss something? I thought you were talking about he made a proclamation for Hanukkah, he made a proclamation for Kwanzaa.
I don't care if the president never says another word about Christmas, but if he's going to issue Ramadan proclamations and he's going to issue Kwanzaa proclamations and Hanukkah proclamations, to make an oversight for Christmas would be a terrible injustice.
I would say it's just silly. I mean, you know, do you really think, Joe, that there are any Christians in America who are going to say, you know, that Jesus Christ guy, he said some good things, and but, you know, forget about him because George Bush didn't do a Christmas proclamation. Do you really think anybody's going to leave Christianity because of this?
I hope you're really comfortable defending George Bush today, Tom. I hope you feel really good. But this is not about George Bush. It's about groups like the ACLU, Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
It's about people like you who say we're 96% of the people, we're the majority, and therefore the store should absolutely cater to our religion and say to hell with everybody else's religion.
I don't know how many times I've heard the ACLU talk about how a chilling effect has been created by some court ruling, and it's the ACLU that has created a chilling effect on this country when it comes to free expression of religion.
Okay, Joe Farah, I gave you the last word. Joe Farah, founder and editor and CEO of WorldNetDaily.com, his latest book, Taking Back America. Joe, thanks for being with us today.
Yep.
16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
First we'll frisk you, then we'll test you.
Yeah, no doubt.
And it won't be so bad if you should fail. Tell my friends hi if they arrest you, 'cause they've also spent time in jail. He will arrest you.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. And I'm telling you, this so-called phony war on Christmas, what I call the war on Hanukkah, is a major... I've been trying to ignore this thing. I have been really struggling with this for the last 2 weeks now. You know, and I've been saying, I'm not going to talk about it and all this stuff. Fox News aired 58 segments between November 28th and December 2nd about this supposed war on Christmas. Just in that, what was that, five-day period? 58 segments. MSNBC putting Jerry Falwell on to offering legal representation to anyone facing persecution for celebrating Christmas. You got ads that are running all across the United States right now saying Sam Alito, the Supreme Court nominee, is the guy who's going to save Christmas. This has gone beyond political correctness. This has become a right-wing witch hunt. You got Bill O'Reilly leading the charge in a way that is nothing less than crass. In my opinion, opportunistic and preying on the worst, the basest of some people's emotions and fears of others. But beyond that, it's just like, this is just such a phony baloney thing. It just boggles my mind. And this is exactly the kind of stuff that the Nazis did. You know, they're out to destroy Christianity, speaking not just of the Jews, but largely. I mean, he's also went after, he started out going after Catholics, or eventually went after the Catholics even. But of course, the big thing, you read Mein Kampf, and what's really spooky, in fact, I wrote a piece for Common Dreams 1 year ago this week. And you can find it on TomHartman.com. You click on Articles for Democracy, in which I took a chapter from Hitler's Mein Kampf and replace the word Jew with the word liberal, and it reads like Ann Coulter. I'm telling you, this is not a small thing. These guys, and they are using this to whip up support for Joe Alito. That is the ultimate strategy here for the Supreme Court nominee, so that he can ride in on his white horse and save Christmas. And he's the guy who never saw government power that he didn't like. So you have a president who wants to wiretap you without getting a warrant, without having to talk to a judge, without having to make a case for it at all to anybody under any circumstances, period, just because he said so. And that's what we fought a revolutionary war to overthrow, right? The right of kings. And the only thing standing in his way might be the Supreme Court and Joe Alito's voting record as a judge. indicates in virtually every regard that he's the kind of guy who's going to say, sure, George, you want that power, you can have that power, because he has always voted for Big Brother. You think Joe Alito's a conservative? No real conservative, no real conservative would ever go along with expanding government power. For that matter, arbitrarily in particular, and particularly when it comes to our civil liberties, for that matter, neither would any true liberal or progressive. Fascists do. Plutocrats do. Kleptocrats do. Autocrats do. Federalists do. And Joe Alito, right along the, all along the way. Yeah, it's has always voted to support more government power. And in the defense of government power and against the little guy. And I'm telling you, this is what is going on. Scott in Philadelphia on the line. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great, what's up?
First, I just want to say, only an hour on Sirius. We definitely need more of you.
Well, thank you. Actually, all 3 hours of the program are on. They're just on a little bit later in the day.
Oh, okay.
They time delay.
Yeah. You know, I'm sitting here listening to this guy, and I'm laughing and yelling at the same time.
Yeah.
How can anybody in their right mind say that in this country that there's a war on Christians when it is the Christians who are running the country? We booted Harriet Myers. If there's a war in this country, it's on Muslims and Jews.
Yeah. There's that's my point. That's what I said. I think, you know, Alex Goldmark, who runs the board there in New York, Alex, you had suggested a war on what did you say it should be?
I said it should be their war on happy holidays.
Right. And I'm, what do you think about my saying that it's their war on Hanukkah, Alex?
I don't think it's specifically against Hanukkah. I think they're just as much against secularism as they are against Judaism.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll go along with that.
I just see it as they just want to be at the top of the plateau.
Yeah.
Looking down at everyone else.
In other words, they want us all equally oppressed, and I shouldn't even include myself in us, because I'm a Christian here. You know, it's like,
exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
It's like, it's bizarre. It is absolutely bizarre. My concern, Scott, I'm sorry, Scott, we're out of time here, but my concern is that they are using this thing in a very aggressive fashion. They are using this thing to gain political power. Now, you can understand Bill O'Reilly simply trying to hype his ratings and make more money from advertising. These guys are trying to get political power with this. That's the danger. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Harpin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Body is her own. In a perfect world, there's no melting ice cream.
Welcome cold. Back, my friends. The place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Although we would settle for clean elections and maybe a national health care system. Welcome back. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, smalldog.com, their website. It's getting pretty tight here. If you want to give them a call right away, I don't know what the shipping thing is on getting stuff out for Hanukkah or Christmas, whatever, for the holiday season, as we were talking about. By the way, interesting news here in the Palm Beach Post. I see we have a caller on the topic here. Phil, I'll let you break the story. Phil in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, this is incredible. This is Rush Limbaugh's Christmas present.
Yep.
George Bush.
James Martz, the prosecutor who was trying to throw his butt in jail, is on his way out.
Yep. He was appointed a Palm Beach County judge.
Yep. He's actually on his way up, I guess. Yep.
Now his income is up to $49,000 a year from the $46,000 a year he was probably making as state's attorney here in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. This guy will go on the air probably today, screaming about the fact that, you know, George Bush is just trying to save us all by taking away our rights. And here's a guy that's spending thousands of dollars to prevent his quote, rights to obstruct justice by keeping information about his drug addiction from state prosecutors.
Yeah. Now, yeah, and my problem with that is that Limbaugh doesn't have the decency to come out and say that he thinks that drugs should be treated as a medical problem rather than a legal problem, because that's what he's asking for. He is asking, you know, he has gotten medical treatment for his drug addiction, and, you know, hopefully he's, you know, still clean. Heaven only knows. He certainly lapsed back into tobacco addiction, but nonetheless, you know, apparently he's not abusing opiates. And
you don't have any. Wait, let me stop you there. You have no clue because you didn't have a clue when he was doing them.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And that's, by the way, that's one of the things that I found really interesting with the experiment in England where they, when they decriminalized heroin and said to heroin addicts, you can come and get it from the state for 10 cents a dose, and just, you know, it made it a prescription drug essentially, and that now there are people who are judges, who are lawyers, who are teachers, who are, you know, whatever, who are also heroin addicts, and many of them are slowly weaning themselves off, and, you know, it just kind of falls away, apparently, after a year or so, or a couple of years, and some fascinating documentation on that, because it is being treated as a medical condition rather than a criminal condition, and it broke the back of that part of organized crime in London, or in the UK when they did that. And the same thing in the Netherlands. So anyhow, my problem with Limbaugh is his hypocrisy in not saying, you know, let's all treat this like a medical problem. He just wants it to be treated like a medical problem for him. But if you're a person of color, or if you're a person, well, actually, if you're anybody else, throw their butts in jail.
Yeah, but Tom, one thing, you know, this issue of he taking it for his back is a lie. How does somebody with a bad back play 18 holes of golf?
Yeah. No, I think everybody knows that, Phil. And Phil, I'm going to move along from the topic. I appreciate the call. It's great to hear from you. And it'll be interesting to see who is brought in to replace the prosecutor by, you know, Jeb Bush now removing the prosecutor in the Limbaugh case, essentially promoting him up and out. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number 866-440-THOM. And Doug in Chambersville, Pennsylvania. Hey, hey, Doug.
Tom, how are you?
I'm great. What's up?
I just want to talk about Christmas a little bit. Christmas was originally a pagan holiday to celebrate the winter solstice. Do you know if that's true or not? Isn't that true?
Well, it wasn't called Christmas then, but yes.
No, right. It was just a celebration around this time of year. But the thing I want to point out is that Jesus was born in the month of March.
Well, according to all indications, yeah, that was when the tax was apparently done, and that was also when they were lambing, when the shepherds had to sleep in the fields.
Right.
So, yeah, probably March, maybe April, yeah.
Right. So why are you see, everything that this man was saying about, like, the Christians are being persecuted or something, it seems to me that it's the exact opposite. That any time that something's going on that's being celebrated that's not Christians, the Christians get upset about it and want to, you know, force their way on everybody else.
Yeah, it's...
If you understand what I'm saying.
No, you're making the exact same point I was, Doug, and I appreciate your calling and making it. You're 96% of the population. How can you say you're a persecuted minority? You just can't play that card. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, a couple points on this. First of all, yeah, I disagree with you on this Alito tact with this culture war on Christmas.
Have you seen the ads?
Yeah, but I think the larger tactic here is to divert all of us from the looting of the treasury, all the massive corruption with Libby and his treason, Delay, Rove, Frist with his insider trade.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to argue with that.
I mean, all of that, all of that is to divert us. And Alito,
but see, getting Alito into the Supreme Court, getting Sam Alito onto the Supreme Court, or Scalito, as we probably should call him, getting him onto the Supreme Court is going to, or may well, in all probability, will allow them to continue to have the kind of power that allows them to continue that looting.
I think
it's very important to them to get Sam Alito on the Supreme Court. And have you seen the commercials that are running? They start out by saying, you know, there was this community and they had an nativity scene and they had to take it down, and Sam Alito got it put back up. He put Christ back in the Christmas, or something like that. This is not just, you know, Bill O'Reilly making a fool of himself on national television anymore.
Right, but it's brilliant how they do this, because you're right that the higher-ups, the guys running the show, of course they want Alito because that's what they're really after. But for the sheeple, the followers, it fits in nicely to their little culture war, saying, like one of your guests said, I think it's the larger war on secularism. First of all, that term does not mean atheism. That means,
right,
like you, you're a Christian, but you believe in secular institutions like a civil court.
Right.
Not a
yeah.
religious court. And just like President Carter and Martin Luther King, religious men believe in secular institutions.
Yeah,
they think,
absolutely.
These followers think that secularism, they think, means atheism.
Yeah, no, and that's one of the great lies, is that they're trying to reinvent the word secular as atheist. Tom, thanks for the call. A good point. Speaking of secularism, early voting results coming in from Iraq. This is incredible. The Australia, the Paul McGough, the chief Herald correspondent in Baghdad. This is for the Sunday morning, the Sydney Morning Herald, Sydney, Australia, sort of the New York Times of Australia. Conservative religious parties have surged to a runaway lead in the counting of votes to appoint a government to run Iraq for the next 4 years. With more than 60% of the votes tallied, Washington's hope for a former Prime Minister, Iyad Alawi, might pull enough support to build a secular administration have faded dramatically. Instead, a religious alliance is in the box seat. These parties are already imposing a strict religious code on daily life across swaths of the country and are closely aligned with neighboring Iran, one of George Bush's axis of evil enemies. The religious Shiites and the Kurdish parties have maintained their iron grip on the south and north, respectively, but with 89% of votes counted in the Baghdad melting pot, and this is where they thought the secularists would win, both Dr. Alawi and his arch-rival and one-time Pentagon darling Ahmed Chalabi face marginalization. And from the New York Times, early voting results, nearly two-thirds of the ballots counted. Religious groups, particularly the main Shiite coalition, taking a commanding lead. Secular coalition led by Iyad Alawi, the former prime minister, won only meager support in crucial provinces where it had expected to do well, including Baghdad. The front runner among Sunni Arab voters. Now, keep in mind, Osama bin Laden was a Sunni. The Wahhabists are the Sunnis. The Taliban are Sunnis. Okay. The front-runner among the Sunni Arab voters was a religious coalition whose leaders have advocated resistance to the American military and have demanded that President Bush set a timetable for withdrawing the American military from Iraq. Now, on the other hand, among the Shia, and keep in mind, Iran is Shia, the main Shia coalition, the United Iraqi Alliance, has won 1.4 million votes, or 59%. This is the religious group. The runner-up was the Iraqi Consensus Front, the main religious Sunni Arab coalition with 19%. The secular coalition, the Iraq List, Mr. Alawi's group, 14%. Ahmed Chalabi, less than one-half of 1% so far. He might not even get a seat in the Council of Representatives. Now, the New York Times article by Edward Wong, it does note, officials warned that the results could still change. In fact, I understand Diebold is on their way over there right now. Representatives, Wally O'Dell, maybe that's why he quit his job. He's going off to Iraq. No, I joke. But you want to see what it looks like when a country goes from secular to religious really quick? Yeah, there you go. Susan in Maine. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. I'm calling with a comment about political correctness.
Okay, we have about a half a minute, Susan.
Okay, it's an easy, short statement. Political correctness is the term that the newly rude people have decided to use against people who are exercising common courtesy. And I call these people the new rude, and I think that that's a good term for them.
I think it's a pretty good definition. I like that.
It's my definition.
There are some times when we do carry the desire to be appropriate to extremes, but by and large, it's mostly common sense
and good manners. What they're against is ordinary common courtesy, treating others as you would like to be treated,
yeah.
And they're calling that
Christianity.
Yeah, they're calling it political correctness, and it really bugs me. They sneer at all the best things. They sneer at do-gooder.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well said. Susan, thanks a lot for the call from Maine. Well said. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Christmas always goes too fast. It's up to us to make it last. And all I want for Christmas is love.
Yeah, how about some tolerance? How about some good manners? Welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire, no passes from the RNC required. If you have a no blood for oil bumper sticker on your car, we won't come in with a couple of goons and drag you out. Welcome back to the program. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Neil in Wyoming on the line. Hey, Neil, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Excuse me, but I got a cold. Hey, I wanted to bring up something about Christmas.
Sure.
When Bush gave his speech in Philadelphia a week ago yesterday,
yeah,
they did a Q&A, and someone who identified himself as a Sunni got up and asked him a question. Bush's response was, first of all, success will help the image of the United States. Look, I recognize we got an image issue, particularly when you got television stations, Arabic television stations, that are constantly just pounding America, saying America is fighting Islam. Americans can't stand Muslims. This is a war against the religion. You know, when these people get up there and say that, they're fighting a war against Christmas. What I think they're doing is they're putting our soldiers in harm's way. And President Bush seems to agree. We've obviously got to do a better job of reminding people.
So your point, Neil, is that, let me see if I'm getting this right, that when guys like, well, not necessarily Joe Farah, but Bill O'Reilly and whatnot, when these guys come out and they say there's a war on Christmas, that they're arguing that the United States is essentially a Christian nation, and therefore when we act around the world using force, we're doing it in the name of Christianity, because after all, we're a Christian nation, and that's what we're all about, and therefore therefore the war actually does have to do with Christians against Muslims.
Well, and what Bush is saying is that we have an image problem. People are thinking we're fighting them just because of their religion.
Right.
He goes on to say that ours is a nation that accepts people of all faith, and that's a great strength of America, is the capacity for people to worship freely. Except worship freely only if you're a Christian, as far as I'm concerned, from what I've been hearing
And particularly not if your worship involves the use of psychoactive plants. But that's a whole other topic, but one that I think is important. There are a variety of ways of worship. Actually, you know, it was Jimmy Carter, I believe, who signed the Native American Religious Freedom Act. I did some work on one of the Native American reservations in the Southwest and with their schools some years ago, and helping them put together educational systems in their schools. And I was amazed to discover that Native Americans in some communities in the United States as late as the 1970s were being put in jail. I mean, the people that I was staying with, their granduncle, their father's brother, so this would have been one generation back, this would have been in the 40s or 50s, it was put in prison for doing the sun dance, which has nothing to do with psychoactive plants. It was just worshiping in their tradition, in that particular tradition. So anyhow, Neil, thanks for the point. Well made. We could go off on so many tangents with this. Wayne in Connecticut. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Great show.
Thank you.
Hey, real quick, isn't it true? Is the word holiday actually, is it from the word holy day?
Yeah, it's a contraction.
Wouldn't it be more reverent to actually wish somebody a happy holy day?
Sure. If you want to be reverent, you know, right. if you want to be, have a glass of beer, it's holly day, or happy day or something. Happy day.
Yeah, I also think it's kind of funny that Bill O'Reilly was selling holiday ornaments until it was actually pointed out.
Yeah, it shows the fundamental hypocrisy of it. Good point, Wayne. Thank you very much. Heidi in South Carolina. Hey, Heidi, what's on your mind?
Hi. First of all, I want to say I love your show.
Thank you.
And second thing, main thing I want to say is the speaker you had on before talking about how there's a war on Christmas.
Right.
And he talked about there was a hypersensitivity in our culture, and I believe him and his group are very hypersensitive to, you know, us saying happy holidays. I mean, when I sent out Christmas cards to my friends, I sent out Merry Christmas cards to the ones I knew that were Christians, but I sent happy holiday ones to everybody else that, you know, I wasn't sure about. And I'm supposed to feel bad because I want to be inclusive.
You're supposed to feel bad because you want to have good manners, Heidi.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's the bottom line.
They're trying to
This is a war on Miss Manners. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a war on Emily Post.
They're trying to boycott these companies that are trying to be inclusive, include everybody. And, no one's keeping them from saying Merry Christmas. No one is keeping them from practicing their religion.
Yeah.
That guy, he can say Merry Christmas to whoever he wants to.
Yeah.
But if I don't want to and I want to say Happy Holidays, it's my right.
Yeah. Yeah, well said, Heidi. Thank you very much. And the previous caller said, this is really all about manners, good manners and bad manners. It really is. It's a war on bad manners, or it's a war on good manners is what these guys have declared. Let's move along. Let's move along from this. Dale in Philadelphia. Hey, Dale, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. Great show.
Sure. Thank you. We have about a half a minute left.
Yeah. John Dean said that the President Bush is just the first president in history to admit for an impeachable offense. Are people now afraid to call for impeachment because they might end up with Cheney or Rice? What's the pecking order after Bush?
It would go Bush, Cheney. I think it then goes to the Speaker of the House. I used to have the list memorized, and frankly, I don't remember it right now off the top of my head. But I can find out for you quickly, and I'll report in the next hour. But frankly, I don't think that anybody. I mean, the whole point of impeachment, even if you ended up with Cheney, the point of impeachment is to prosecute somebody for a crime. It's not about oh my God, are we going to end up with Cheney? Could he be even worse? And thanks for the call, Phil. Good point. It's about this guy broke the law, and we want to make sure that the next guy doesn't. And let's correct the problem. Now, for the Republicans with Bill Clinton, it was not about that. When the Republicans prosecuted Bill Clinton, it was about, let's render this guy politically impotent. Let's take away any of his political power by tying him up in like a pretzel, with trying to defend himself from prosecution, with the impeachment proceedings. But in the case of Bush, admitting a felony, I think that's why you do it. It's 3 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes after the hour, our Bioneers segment for the day. Spencer Beebe, founder and president of EcoTrust. Founded in 1990, Bioneers is a nonprofit organization that promotes practical environmental solutions and innovative social strategies for restoring the earth and communities. They have a conference every year. Well, actually, there's a whole bunch of activities around. You can see it all at bioneers.org. And Spencer Beebe, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You are at ecotrust.org or salmonnation.com. You're trying to create Salmon Nation?
That's right.
Tell me about it.
Salmon Nation is a place defined by natural boundaries, by the places that salmon go and by the people who live there. It's simply a way of kind of reframing the issues and the question, a way to imagine ourselves as being citizens of a place that have very particular environmental characteristics. And to the extent that we can build an economy and a society that respects those natural conditions, then we can flourish.
Now, it's interesting. There's a famous Canadian writer whose name is escaping me, but he wrote a book that I read probably 15 years ago that really deeply impressed me, called The People of the Deer, about the Native American people in central eastern Canada that he lived among, who ate deer, basically. I mean, that was their primary food source. And they referred to themselves as deer, I mean, as the people of the deer, because they were made up of deer. They got it, that their bodies were literally made up of the bodies of deer that they had eaten, and that they had an elaborate, religion is probably the wrong word, but an elaborate epistemology that involved, people and deer interacting and reincarnating and all kinds of strange things, and or not strange things, but, this very, very extraordinary dance. I understand that among some of the Native Americans of the Pacific Northwest, there was something very similar with salmon.
That's absolutely right, Tom. From Alaska to California, we had for 10 to maybe 15,000 years the densest and in many ways the most prosperous and culturally rich native people anywhere in the world, in the history of the world, who lived by salmon and seafood, and who had a very elaborate set of relationships and rituals that respected fish and wildlife of all kinds and thought of themselves as part of a larger community.
Yeah, are you familiar with Peter Farb's book, Man's Rise to Civilization?
Yeah.
It's an amazing ethnography of Native American communities, and he speaks of the Pacific, people of the several of the different tribes, people of the Pacific Northwest. So
well, the idea, of course, is not to look backwards, but to live with some respect and understanding of the history of the region, but to imagine ourselves as being residents of this place.
Right. We're not trying to, you know, people of European origin are not trying to become Native Americans.
No, this is not a flashback to a former time or some romantic vision of a pastoral life, but rather a very contemporary and revolutionary idea to just think of ourselves taking power to make decisions ourselves about how we live and how it affects others that live in this region and how it affects the environment.
Right. So you say on your website you're looking for 15 million citizens for Salmon Nation. What would it mean to become a citizen of Salmon Nation? What would it be like?
I think it would be, I think the fact is that these citizens exist, that people throughout the region, Alaska to California, recognize the importance of the environment, the quality of the water. They recognize that we can grow good, healthy local food and maintain, grow forests in a way that produce wood but also produce environmental services.
How would things be different than they are right now? I mean, you got people living in houses, driving cars, consuming gasoline, eating fish, eating farmed salmon. What's going to change?
Yeah, a lot would have to change, really. We'd forget about farmed salmon. They're very destructive. We'd have be nourishing wild marine and aquatic systems and wild salmon.
So you're going to have to knock out a bunch of dams to do that, aren't you?
You may have to take down some dams, but we could be growing local, fresh, seasonal food and connecting more directly with the people who live here. We wouldn't see a lot of large square clear cuts on the side of hills. We'd see a small patch cuts and thinnings.
I have to say, we're speaking with Spencer Beebe, the founder and president of EcoTrust, ecotrust.org and salmonnation.com. Spencer, I'm seeing, some pieces of what you're talking about right here in Portland. And frankly, when I lived in Vermont, I was seeing the same thing in Montpelier, Vermont, and Northfield, Vermont, where I lived. And even some of that in New Hampshire when I lived there, and in Atlanta when I lived there. Of people who are creating community and are trying to live more lightly on the earth and are, moving in these directions without trying to have the force of government brought into the process. Are you suggesting that, that government should essentially, that we should reinvent government and it should say, okay, this is how you're going to live now?
I think we could do a lot of reinventing government, and this is indeed part of a global movement, maybe the most powerful social movement ever in history. And it's happening, as you say, in the U.S., but it's happening all over the world.
But wouldn't it be healthier to have it happen from the bottom up, and have it happen as part of a natural, people really? For example, I think the majority of people who are buying organic food now maybe originally started out buying organic food because they didn't want to get cancer. They were concerned about the pesticides and chemicals that are used, or they wanted to have better nutrition. And now they're being sensitized to the fact that the production of organic food, by and large, is a lighter way to live on the earth. I mean, these sorts of, you sell people what you can sell them. You look for the point at which you can enter somebody's consciousness. It just seems a kind of dangerous thing to say, we're going to take a region of the country and we're going to take over the government of it.
Yeah, no, I don't think we need to take over the government. I think we just need to be more responsible and thoughtful citizens. I do think it's the case that rarely has the government solved a lot of the environmental problems that we deal with. They address it, they compromise, they allocate money, but one day create a park and the next day want to dig it up for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So I think that that government can do so much. We need both. We need some lines drawn in the sand by the Clean Air Act and the Endangered Species Act and so forth. But I think we can, a lot of this is the idea that we as individuals who live in a place should not sit back and wait for the government to solve all the problems, but we can take initiative ourselves right here, right now, immediately to improve our own lives and the lives of neighbors and other people in the region.
Very good. Well said. Spencer Beatty, the website ecotrust.org or salmonnation.com. Spencer, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you here on our Bioneers segment for the day. I did check, by the way, the order of presidential secession, and tip of the hat to both Alex and also the folks in the chat room who dug this out. From Info Please, the order of presidential secession, the original Presidential Secession Act of 1792, the Senate President Pro Tem was next in line after the Vice President. However, in 1886, they changed things around, and to not further confuse you, they changed it again in 47, the Presidential Secession Act of 47, and then it got changed again with the 25th Amendment in 1967. And so now what we have is if the president were to be impeached, if George W. Bush were to be impeached, God willing, the vice president, Richard Cheney, would follow him. If Richard Cheney were to be impeached, possibility there. In fact, you look at the Valerie Plame case, he may go first, actually. Then the Speaker of the House, which right now is John Dennis Hastert. And then if he is impeached, then you've got the President Pro Tem of the Senate, who is right now Ted Stevens, the curmudgeon, the 82-year-old curmudgeon from Alaska. I suppose in Alaska people like him. It's apparently somebody does. Secretary of State...
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. Loretta Napoleoni is the author of Insurgent Iraq and a former Fulbright scholar and expert on international terrorism. Loretta, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for inviting me back.
Thank you. It's great to talk with you again. Insurgent Iraq, El-Zarqawi and the New Generation, the title of your book. And you say Abu Musab al-Zarqawi is succeeding in some way where bin Laden did not?
Yes. What I say is that bin Laden was the head of Al-Qaeda, which was an international armed organization, which was, you know, relatively small, while Al-Zarqawi today is the international icon of an anti-imperialist movement, which is the international jihadist movement. So in that, he has achieved much more than Osama bin Laden.
That's amazing. And just because the United States invaded Iraq?
Well, yes, not only because the United States invaded Iraq, but because the United States invaded Iraq using Al-Zarqawi as the link, the fictitious link between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. So he was, to a certain extent, the reason why the U.S. managed to convince its allies that it was necessary to go into Iraq.
So in other words, he was not aligned with Osama bin Laden. We said he was. We publicized him. We were his best promoter. And now he has eclipsed Osama bin Laden.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have done something incredible because, you know, this is also a working class individual. He's somebody that does not come from a super privileged background as Osama bin Laden and al-Zawahiri. And all of a sudden, we put him in the middle of the international network of terrorism. So from the point of view of the jihadists across the world, this is almost a sign of democratization inside al-Qaeda. You know, they are very proud that one of them, somebody from the people, a working class, a proletariat, has actually reached the top. What people don't realize is that we put it right there, not Al-Qaeda.
We put him there, and then he said, fine, I'll take this.
Well, of course, then it became a self-fulfilling prophecy, of course, because once he became internationally known, money and people start flocking to join his organization.
Now, do you think that he's still alive, and do you think that bin Laden is still alive?
Yes, I think they're both still alive. I mean, we know that Al-Zarqawi is still alive because, you know, he actually produced a communique recently. This is after there was a rumor that he had been killed. And, you know, the communique was directed to Osama bin Laden, reassuring Osama bin Laden that he was still alive. So, yes, I think they're still alive.
Interesting. What do you make of the vote in Iraq? The reports seem to be that the secular party has got about 14% of the vote. About 70% of the vote has been counted now, unless the last few votes that they count, sort of like the governor's race in Alabama a couple of years ago, where suddenly in the middle of the night it flipped from the Democrat winning to the Republican winning. Unless these last few votes have some huge surprise, it looks like the religious Sunnis and the religious Shia are going to end up controlling that country.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all, because, you know, within the Sunni, already in the 1990s, during the UN sanction, there was a growing popularity among the Islamo-nationalists. So these are, you know, people that come from the Sunni triangle, but, you know, they are extremely religious. And these people were actually encouraged by Saddam Hussein. So we have seen a sort of process of Islamization of Iraq already in the 1990s. I think, you know, the problem with Iraq at the moment, and, you know, the election confirmed that, is that we in the West, in particular coalition forces, we have not backed the secular forces because we were too afraid that by doing that we were backing the former Ba'athist members. And that would have been a terrible mistake, because now we're going to end up with a country controlled by, you know, religious authorities.
But we were backing Alawi, who's secular, and at various times we were backing Chalabi, who is secular, and Chalabi looks like he's pulled 0.5% of the vote, and perhaps not even enough for the seat in the House of Representatives. And Alawi looks like he's pulling 14% of the vote, not doing very well.
Well, I mean, both Alawi and Chalabi, they're also very close to, you know, the religious groups who are backing them. Chalabi in particular is very close to Iran. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the fact that he presents himself as being secular does not mean that once he controls the country, the country is going to be run by secular principles. I think we've got to always look at who is actually backing this individual, who is bankrolling them. Because, you know, Chalabi is very, very wealthy. I mean, one of the strongest points in, you know, this election, that the fact that he actually got quite good results, is because, you know, he's quite wealthy.
Well, before Saddam Hussein threw his father out of the country, he was the richest man in Iraq, wasn't he, his father?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It was, you know, the richest. Yes, it was the richest family. And Iraq is a country where money can buy a lot of votes. So let's not forget that.
Yeah.
But we know that he's still backed by Iran for sure. So, you know, the situation is, I really think the situation is very, very complex. And we have this religious presence, which is, I think, is a negative factor.
Yeah, to say the very least. So what Loretta Napoleoni, who's the author of Insurgent Iraq, Al-Zarqawi and the New Generation, what are you foreseeing? What sort of Iraq do you see emerging over the next few years as a result of everything that we've done up to this point?
Well, I think there'll be a struggle for a partition. In particular, we'll see the Kurds and the Shia are trying to carve their little mini-state inside Iraq, and that, of course, you know, will cut out completely the Sunni from the share of the resources. We're talking about, you know, oil and gas.
Right.
So this is going to be the core of, you know, the civil war, which is already present there and will continue to be present. I think, you know, a possible solution is an involvement from the United States and also coalition forces in order to force the Shia and the Kurds to accept the Sunni as equal citizens, which is not what is happening today. Let's not forget that the Constitution does discriminate against the Sunni. So I think, you know, all of these elements have to be sorted out if we want to avoid a civil war.
Isn't there also in the Constitution essentially a Supreme Court which must make decisions in accordance with Islam, not unlike the Supreme Court in Iran?
Yes, there is something like that in the Constitution. But it's very, again, it is extremely ambiguous, the interpretation
sure.
of what this really means.
Well, so is Iran's. Exactly. It's just that they choose to interpret it the way that they want to.
Yes, well, exactly. But this is why, you see, we are in a sort of very fluid situation because, you know, one of the things that this parliament is supposed to do is actually to produce a final version of the constitution.
Right. And so if the religious groups, both Sunni and Shia, end up controlling the parliament and they produce a final constitution, women will be back in the veil and not able to vote or drive. I mean, we could see a new Saudi Arabia if the Sunnis in the Sunni parts of town. We could see a new Taliban in the Shia parts of town. Would we not? Or actually, the Taliban is Sunni, is it not?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you know, the Taliban are Sunni. So what is going to happen is that there will be a tremendous push for a very conservative interpretation of, you know, what this Islamic legislation is all about and the Sharia. And yes, of course, you know, women will be the first one to suffer. But, you know, I think, you know, overall the entire population will suffer because, you know, these two groups, the Shia and the Sunni religious groups, will try to bring the country backwards, you know,
yeah,
going back to the 7th century Arabia or, you know, to what Khomeini did in 1979 in Iran.
Yeah. And do you agree with Jack Murtha that the American forces there have become so much of an irritant that we're causing more problems than we're solving?
I agree and disagree to a certain extent. I think we are in a situation whereby the American forces and coalition forces are perceived as a sort of occupying power. But then at the same time, you know, the moment in which we'll pull out of Iraq, the situation will degenerate, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I say we're in a very fluid situation, and before pulling out the troops, I think we must try to find a sort of political solution in order to avoid the creation of a state whereby, you know, we have three mini-states emerging, two of which are be extremely religious, and imitating one, you know, Iran, and the other one Saudi Arabia. That would
right.
be a disaster.
We're creating a Yugoslavia here.
Well, yeah, this is why in the last chapter of my book I talk about the Balkanization of Iraq, because this is what is happening, and
yeah,
we are responsible.
Loretta Napoleoni, the book Insurgent Iraq, El Zarqawi and the New Generation. Loretta, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. Have a nice day.
Thank you, and I encourage folks to check out the book. It's fascinating. 16 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, especially out of the White House. Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. There's some concerns there might be some monkey business going on in Iraq right now as well. Sunni Arabs alleged Tuesday that last week's parliamentary elections were fraudulent, especially in Baghdad province. And they said if the irregularities are not corrected, new balloting must be held in Iraq's largest electoral district. An electoral commission official said more than 1,000 complaints are being investigated, but only 20 are very serious. So we'll see how that shakes out. But so far it looks like the winners are going to be the religious. The hopes, U.S., as the headline in the Sydney Morning Herald says, the U.S. hopes of secular Iraqi state fade away. Nancy Anton is with us with Newsounds.us. They watch Fox, so we don't have to. Thank you. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, how are you today?
Just great. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What's the main meme on Fox News right now?
Well, they have taken the war on Christmas theme and twisted it a little bit.
Okay.
They had a special on Sunday about the religious wars that are going on in this country.
For example?
The church versus state, wall of separation and all that. But it was interesting because it ended up being a promotion for Alito's nomination to the Supreme Court.
I've been saying this all along, that
yep.
Actually, last year they rolled out the war on Christmas thing as well. In fact,
right.
last year I wrote a thing for Common Dreams about it. You know, they rolled this thing out as like, you know, they got to have a boogeyman. You know, back in the 50s it was the communists. Now
right.
it's, you know, now it's the secularists or whatever. But this year not only is the war on Christmas, a good moneymaker for Fox News,
right.
You know, it draws eyeballs, sells advertising, gives them some political clout, but it also is they're also going to use this thing to get Alito into the United States Supreme Court.
They're making it a crusade. In fact, Brett Hume, who was the host of this special on Sunday, said that it was the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail was his words.
Putting Sam Alito on the Supreme Court?
Yes.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. It's
it's the language of crusade, you know?
Oh, sure, sure. Now, spying on Americans is big in the news right now. This whole thing, you know, yesterday Bush saying, well, I have every right to do this, and, you know, the word is out. And yesterday on this program, I quoted extensively from Richard Nixon, and where he was saying that if the president does it, it's legal, and which basically is what Bush is saying.
Right.
And Nixon saying the Constitution gives me the authority, and the war in Vietnam gives me the authority, and Bush saying essentially the same thing now.
Yes.
It didn't fly for Richard Nixon, but Richard Nixon didn't have Fox News. How's Fox News dealing with this?
Oh, they've tried it out a lot of the usual suspects to excuse and mitigate and blame Clinton.
To blame Clinton?
Oh, yeah, because he did it too.
Clinton was using the FISA courts, wasn't he?
The Echelon program and some other stuff that was going on. But it's all a distractorama. Don't pay any attention to this over here, you know.
Yeah.
Blame Clinton.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
So,
although one of their regulars, Judge Andrew Napolitano, was on Dayside yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And he said clearly Bush broke the law.
You're
kidding.
I
thought it was interesting. Napolitano is one of the ones who doesn't always toe the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they've got a few people like that on there. I mean, Ellen Ratner, who with Talk Radio News Service, who is on our program every day or very frequently, and, you know, a known liberal. She's a commentator for Fox, but
mm-hmm.
I don't mean this to be demeaning of Ellen. I'm sure you've seen her on, but my take on it was that she was the liberal that they would bring out to beat up. I remember when.
Yes.
You know, when they were putting together the Hannity and Combs show, it was Sean Hannity and unnamed liberal. That was how it was right up until about a week before the show went on the air.
Right.
And apparently they've got a few people on there that they. So this guy, but this guy's a conservative.
Pretty much. But he's a judge.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's talking about. He doesn't do the foaming at the mouth rants.
Yeah.
He backs up anything he says with some facts.
Yeah, we're talking.
I don't often agree with him, but I know that he's not just talking out of his head.
Yeah,
you know?
we're talking with Nancy Anton of Fox of Newshounds.us. They watch Fox, so you don't have to. And the website Newshounds.us. And one more minute here, Nancy. I just wanted to get a summary from you. What do you see is coming down the road from Fox? What are the early warning signals for the next few days?
Well, one thing is interesting is that Neil Cavuto, the quote business program unquote,
right,
is getting back into the sleeves. About a year ago, Melanie documented 6 months worth of the sleeves on his program,
right,
and all of a sudden it slacked off, and now it's like pumping up again.
Now, what do you mean by sleeves?
Oh, segments about Victoria's Model secrets and segments about Playboy bunnies and segments about Hooters waitresses. And it's all an excuse for, you know, video, eye candy.
Right.
That normally you would only see, like, on bizarre channels late at night.
Right. But they want to get this stuff out there.
You know, prime time, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So all these conservatives sitting around can go, ho-ho, you know. Yeah, amazing.
Exactly.
Okay. Nancy Anton with Fox Newshounds.us. They watch Fox, so we don't have to. Thank you, Nancy, for the great public service you do. I appreciate it. Great hearing from you. It's 27 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Strike you funny at the start. Strike you on the funny bone. Strike a pose and cross your heart. Strike a match and watch it burn. Radio. your computer call, looking for the perfect mate.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. For being progressive, never felt so good. Censure motion introduced in the House over Iraq and torture. Larissa Alexandrovna is reporting over at rawstory.com. And, rawstory.com. Ranking House Judiciary Democrat Representative John Conyers has introduced a motion to censure President Bush and Vice President Cheney for providing misleading information to Congress in advance of the Iraq War, failing to respond to written questions and potential violations of international law. Interesting. The resolutions were quietly introduced Sunday evening along with a third resolution, House Resolution 635, to create a select committee to investigate the administration's intent to go to war prior to congressional authorization. They've got copies of the things. Republicans are not expected to support a select committee, nor are they expected to approve censure motions. And so, you know, these are really more gestures than anything else. But good on you, John Conyers, for making the gesture. We need more of that sort of thing. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM. And our live chat room at TomHartman.com. If you want to drop in and say hi, feel free to come on by. Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. The thing about the Bioneers reminded me of someone you might want to have on.
Okay, you're talking about the, okay, yeah.
And that's Paolo Folleri.
All right.
He is in charge of ArcoSanti. Website is arcosanti.org.
Mm-hmm.
And he's written a book called The City and the Image of Man.
And your point, Steve?
Well,
I should check it out and consider having him on.
Yeah, but now back to my other thing is the follow-up call on the thing I did Friday about the copyright thing.
Right.
I found a news article that was just that just broke today about a bill that's been sponsored by Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin and John Conyers of Michigan that would make it essentially a crime to own and use a VCR.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. Let me give you the link. I'll post it on the web chat. It is real, and I found it on dignation.com.
Yeah, okay. You can drop into the chat room and give me the link.
I'm in there right now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, post it to me, and in fact, you know, pop up a window on me with it, and
okay.
I'll go check it out. I'll let our listeners know about it. Amazing.
We'll be
okay. Thanks a lot,
bye-bye.
Steve. Good to hear from you. The things you learn from your listeners, I'm telling you, we've got the smartest listeners on earth, and many of them are in our chat room. Susan in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I was listening to you mentioning talking about the Iraqi election, and I think this election is going just the way the Bush administration wants it to. Because once the religious fraction takes control of Iraq, Iraq will even be more closely aligned with Iran. And then the Bush administration can say, well, look how evil Iran is. It's more of a threat, and start up another war.
Yeah. Yeah. It is not beyond credulity. What I have to say is that the suggestion that I've been making for some time now is that Bush needs, basically, I mean, any kind of administration like this, any kind of essentially fascistic or, actually that word has so much baggage, but authoritarian regime. An authoritarian regime always has to have an external enemy or an internal enemy, as the case may be, but external enemies in particular work really well. I mean, even Hitler had to invade Poland, right?
Right.
And so Bush has to have an external enemy, and he has to have a war. He had the, you know, in 2002, the October surprise that the Republicans rolled out was the war resolution. And that helped them in November with the elections. In 2004, it was the war in Iraq. In 2006, I've been predicting it'll be a war in Syria. And in 2008, I've been predicting it'll be a war in Iran. And it wouldn't surprise me if your prediction comes true. Although, frankly, I don't think that they planned it that way. I think that they really believed, at least the neocons in this administration, the Wolfowitz, Pearl, Feith bunch, they really believed that they were going to create a paradise on earth in Iraq by altering the Constitution to conform to their libertarian, objectivist, neoconservative, pieces of that they borrowed from all of the above.
You know, worldview. When I was in college, I had this marvelous political science professor, and he said, "You can't create democracy from the outside in; it has to be from the inside out."
Yeah, and in fact,
I think it's true.
Yeah, it is true, and the only exceptions to that that anybody can point to are Germany and Japan. And really what happened in both those countries was that both those countries had fallen under the spell of cult leaders.
Right.
And they both realized it at the end of the war. I mean, that, it wasn't just that we defeated a nation that wanted to have its own nation. And when that happens, typically, you know, you have long, you know, it's like the French in Algeria. You know, you have long period, or us in Vietnam. You have long periods of time where you're fighting the local people. But in Germany, the Nazis were a cult. They were a religious cult.
Yeah.
And Tojo, Hirohito, this was a cult in Japan. You know, the suicide bombers onto the decks of the U.S. airplanes, the Japanese who believed that this was how they get to heaven.
The kamikaze, they absolutely
believed that the emperor was the incarnation of the sun god, and the Germans, many of them believed that Hitler was the reincarnation of Jesus, and that he really was going to bring about a thousand-year reign, or that he was going to bring about the reincarnation or whatever of Jesus, and that this was it. And they had fallen under the sway of a cult. And when the cult was shown to be not invincible, when the cult was shown to have clay feet, then people woke up from it. And then they were like, okay, we'll take democracy. That's not the case in Iraq.
It's like our nuts.
Say that again.
How do we get rid of this nut?
Well, I think that's what's happening. I think that we have a cult running this country. I think that the ultra-right wing in this country is a cult.
Yes.
It very much is a cult. It has all the trappings of a cult. And it is being exposed and recognized as such. And Americans are waking up. And that's, frankly, I think it's a really good thing that Americans are waking up. Yeah, I hope it's enough, too.
I have some Republican friends who will still swear by him.
Well, you know, I know. My father still has his picture on the wall, you know, but he's a good Republican, and he's always going to vote Republican. But I'll tell you, the Republicans I know who were Republicans back, you know, under Eisenhower are looking at George Bush, and they may still vote Republican, but they're getting very quiet now.
Well, they know this is not the same Republican.
They really do.
Great talking to you, Tom.
Thank you, Susan. Talking with you. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Larry in Vashon Island, Washington. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Tom. A couple of quick REs on subjects touched. Spiro Agnew was the governor of Maryland when he was indicted.
Maryland. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, and on the curious targets of the anthrax, they were Democratic congressmen and the American
Democratic senators. The two Democratic senators were the targets of the anthrax, and that was Tom Daschle and Pat Leahy. The only two people who could have stopped the Patriot Act were the only two people who got the anthrax.
It was curious that the only people that actually were affected were the postal workers who were never told that they needed to take any kind of medication.
Yeah.
To counteract that particular virus.
Yeah.
But my topic, though, is about the salmon restoration.
And by the way, the other thing that I thought was weird was that people in the White House were taking...
Cipro.
Yeah, Cipro. Right. Were taking Cipro before the anthrax attacks happened.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of us going, hey, wait a minute, why are you guys taking Cipro, which is the antibiotic for anthrax, before the anthrax attacks happened in the Senate? Before they happened anywhere. I mean, why are they taking Cipro in the White House? And so again, I mean, it's like at a certain point you start sounding like a conspiracy theorist, and yet there it is.
You keep piling on, and it adds up to a lot.
At some point, you have to say, you know, what's going on here? So anyway, but that's not
the salmon restoration that the Salmon Nation interview that you had earlier today. Dovetails quite nicely with a front-page story of the News Tribune in Tacoma, SOS for the Puget Sound. Governor Gregoire is proposing a $42 million down payment on restoring the Puget Sound, $2.5 million of that to go to salmon restoration and estuary restoration. Also, along with that is the personality conflict going on between Maria Cantwell in the Senate and Ted Stevens. She does not want ANWR. He does. So he is trying to punish us here by forcing a long line of oil tankers plying our sound, increasing the probability of spill by thousandfold. And we have very little means of counteracting that other than putting money into it out of our own coffers, and he's hammering Maria Cantwell with that. We had a 1,000-gallon bunker oil spill last year. It ended up covering 55 miles of our shoreline, which is still being cleaned up because it's still upwelling from the 600-foot depths of our sound here.
Yeah, and now the senator from Washington has said that she's going to basically filibuster this defense appropriations bill as long as it has the NWR stuff in it.
Exactly.
It's interesting to see this face-off happening, force of this battle of wills between two very powerful people.
Well, that's because Ted Stevens had his bridge to nowhere taken away from him.
Yes. He's among other things, yeah, and he's not very happy about that. Larry, thanks a lot for
the call.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's interesting to get the perspective on all these things and the whole detail of everything that's going on. By the way, I don't know if you noticed this in the Wall Street Journal today. BP and Exxon, speaking of Ted Stevens, are facing an antitrust lawsuit. The state of Alaska, federal court in Fairbanks, Alaska. Alaska is suing BP and Exxon, the world's largest publicly traded oil companies, for conspiring to withhold natural gas from U.S. markets and thus presumably drive up the prices. This is from an article by Wilkie and Gold in today's Wall Street Journal. They say that the companies have choked the flow of the state's vast gas reserves and are trying to stop them through a court injunction. Fascinating stuff. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Of yourself. Oh, merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
Well, welcome back. Happy holidays. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 9 minutes before the top of the hour. 8202. What is it? August 2nd, 02. Senator Trent Lott, if their answer to everything is more lawsuits, then yes, that's a problem, because I certainly don't support that. In December of this year, Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi today credited the agenda of tax cuts, deregulation, and tort reform initiatives passed by the Congress and signed into law by President Bush with the overall upturn of the national economy. Senator Trent Lott, July 20th, 2001, the Democrats seem to think the answer is a lawsuit. Sue everybody. January 24th, 01. You know, obviously we should enact tort reform. Someday it'll happen. The sooner the better. Senator Trent Lott. May 8th, 02. I'm among the many Mississippi citizens who believe tort reform is needed. Senator Trent Lott. Tort reform, of course, limiting the ability of individuals to sue, particularly to sue like banks and insurance companies. No, today. Well, this week. This from the Wall Street Journal. Mississippi Senator Trent Lott and his wife sued State Farm Fire and Casualty Company to force the insurer to pay for damage to their house in Pascagoula on the Gulf of Mexico, which was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. In fact, he's saying he might not even run for Congress. He said, it was about half my net worth. I have a $400,000 loss after the flood insurance, Trent Lott said. He is sued in his insurance company, this is from the USA Today, and what has become a wind versus water damage dispute between insurance companies and thousands of storm victims. Lott told the Sunday Herald of Biloxi, Mississippi, I need a little more income. Well, at least he can afford to sue his insurance company over $400,000. Most of the people down there can't, and so they're just going to get screwed. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Scott in San Diego, California. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. I have to really admire you for all the hours that you're putting on radio.
Hey, I'm just an old radio rat. I started in radio in 1968. I love radio. So
it's great to hear you all day.
Thank you.
I heard something that kind of scares me. This takes in the conversation that you had on the air some time ago about gene manipulation. I found out on PBS last night that Monsanto has what's called a suicide gene.
Right. They've had it for a number of years.
I just found out about that. Kind
of the Terminator gene.
Yeah, what can happen is we eat that.
Well, it's a gene that's unique to the plant. Basically, what it does is it causes a plant to render itself incapable of reproduction, and it can be flipped on and off, and You know, it's, I'm not defending it by any means. I mean, the danger is not if we eat it. The danger is if this gene gets into other plants.
Well, can it move up the chain? Can it get other plants and start moving where people can't reproduce anymore?
From my limited understanding of biology, and you know, I've studied biology in school, but that's, you know, but my understanding of it is the threat of that particular gene, the Terminator gene, to humans is pretty minimal. The threat of it, though, to other plants is the thing that has a lot of scientists very concerned. And in fact, I wrote a book about this years ago, wrote about this.
And sunlight?
No, actually, it's a book. It's called Death in the Pines that has never been published.
Looking forward to reading it. I got one more quick question, Tom.
Yeah.
Now that impeachment is being bandied about, it's in Newsweek now, I think, about this recent revelation of Thomas Bush trying to suppress a story.
Right.
Do you think we're going to get another terrorist alert or another, worse yet, terrorist attack?
Well, that's what I was saying. I don't want to predict it, but you know, with the Patriot Act expiring on 31st of December, and the possible what's his name, Bill Frist, refusing to bring a 90-day extension forward so that the Patriot Act actually will expire at the end of the year. If there were to be a terrorist attack after the first of the year, these guys will exploit it to high heaven. And you have to ask yourself, why are they refusing to allow a 90-day extension of it? I just don't know, and I'm not going to go there. It's basically Tehran in Seattle. Hey, am I pronouncing your name right?
It's Tehran, like the city.
Tehran, oh, like the city. Okay, Tehran.
How you guys doing over there? Good morning.
Great. What's up?
I just calling. We were speaking about the whole cult and right wing, and I just, you know, I find that there's this connection between the right wing and Zionism, and I wonder if, you know, just get a comment on that, how you think about how our the whole right wing and how they're so connected to Israel has a lot to do with, you know, obviously with our policy and our
what you're talking about, Tehran, is one of the favorite, in my opinion, is one of the favorite bugaboos of the anti-Semitic right, as the folks who, and for that matter, of the anti-Semitic left. so that's, you know, I just don't give it any credibility. I mean, you know, Zionism, by and large, was the movement to create Israel, and there is an Israel now. And so, you know, now it's become code word for basically, you know, being anti-Israel, and I'm not. So not going to go there. Sorry. Vicky in Sacramento, California. Hey, Vicky.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling, I only have a few moments here, but I'm calling to kind of draw a parallel between the perils of having a president like Bush in these times compared to when JFK was president, and his intelligence and integrity brought us so far, and he realized that sometimes you had to go against these corporations like the steel company, et cetera.
Well, and sometimes he realized you have to go against other governments as well. I mean, look at the Cuban Missile Crisis. He stared down Khrushchev.
Yes, he did. And I have to say that my husband and I listened during that week when you played the liberalism speech.
The Kennedy, yeah.
And we were so touched by it. We want to know how to get it.
Oh, well, send me an email. I'll send you the recording.
Send you an email?
Yep, Tom, T-H-O-M, at tomhartmanhut.com, T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's .com, and I will email you the clip. And anybody else who's listening who wants it.
Okay, if I didn't get that, should I call this same number that I called to try to get it?
Just look at my website. I mean, it's basically my first name at my website, at tomhartman.com.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, thank you.
Good talking to you, Vicky. Thanks a lot. It's amazing to me the number of people who sent me emails after I played those Kennedy clips asking for them. And I don't know where they are on the web, so I've just been emailing them to people. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.